Chapter 76. Hysterial Wyant eyed the Alatiran ambassador's untouched Utai. Marcus Guerin was bordering on 50, bald, with a fringe of blonde hair, a small paunch, no bottom, and a restless intelligence in his blue eyes. "There are some troubling rumors we've been hearing that I think we need to discuss," Ambassador Guerin said. Hysterial took the opportunity of taking a sip of Utai to cover her sudden rage. Someone had leaked this to the Alatirans? If he'd learned about Vi's practices, that was one thing. But Hysterial had only told three sisters about her plan to withdraw from the Accords. If he knew about that, it was treason. She simply arched an eyebrow. "What do you know about this High King?" he asked.
"Oh, those rumors, thank the Seraph."
"Little," she said. There was a twinkle in his eye that made her wonder if he had done that on purpose.
"Bastard.
What we've heard has only told us that you ought to know more than we do. He's Alatiran, or at least raised in your glorious country. His name is Moburu Ander, though he claims Ursul blood. We know he's half Lodrakari. He led a company of lancers, and he's found a position of some importance among the savages of the Freeze." She knew more, but there was no point telling Ambassador Guerin.
"He's the adopted son of Aurelius Ander, of a once powerful family that has fallen far in the last two generations. Moburu was adopted at 15. Before that, we can't find any record or recollection of him anywhere, so we give some credence to his claim of Ursul patrimony."
"I doubt that an absence of records was enough to make you believe he's an Ursul," Hysterial said. The ambassador stroked his mustache.
"The captain is both intelligent and charismatic. Nothing was ever found to link him to the scandals and disappearances that seemed to swirl in his wake. Last autumn, the king's sister bore a daughter, Eva Lucrece Corazzi. The child and her wet nurse disappeared. At the same time, Moburu led his company, all of them, to a place called Pavil's Grove, where they fought beside the Caladorans. There are wild tales surrounding that, but most of Moburu's company escaped and headed north."
"You believe he kidnapped the child?"
"What I believe has no relevance. Some very powerful people in Skon insist that he did not. They are having a harder time explaining why he has taken an entire company out of our country without leave, though some whisper it's a secret mission for the king. There are generals who don't wish to appear fools who have not discouraged such whispers. There are even those who claim that Moburu's company itself is trying to recover Eva Lucrece."
"It appears to me that this man must be declared a traitor," Hysterial said. "Otherwise, if he joins Calador again, this time to attack us, Alatera will be making war on the Chantry." The slight wince that passed the ambassador's face told Hysterial that she had voiced an argument he had presented to his superiors himself.
"Our response to Captain Ander will be determined soon, and I promise you will be among the first to know."
Ambassador Guerin's face looked like he was chewing lemons.
"Now, speaking of sharing intelligence," he said, "you never did turn over that intelligence you told us about a few months ago," he said. "But let's return to that in a moment. First, we were hoping this House of Learning might tell us some more about who this High King is supposed to be, and how one identifies him."
Hysterial leaned back in her chair.
"Meaning you won't move against Moburu until you know if he's the real thing?"
"Meaning it is wise to know all one can about one's enemies and friends."
Hysterial took another slow sip of Utai, considering. "The High King is a legend, mostly.
confined to the rural areas of Kalidor, Lodrakar, Cenaria, and Siura. His coming is not spoken of by any of the prophets, recognized by the Chantry. We keep track of prophecies spoken by those who have the perishingly rare talent of prophecy. We think of that one as simply a hope kept alive in Lodrakar and Kalidor, as a longed-for end to oppression. In Cenaria and Siura, it's probably more a wish to be consequential. Something Cenaria hasn't been for centuries.
Your pardon, Speaker, but I'm not terribly interested in why they believe as I am in what they believe. Does this have anything to do with the Sioran Regency?
It could. The Battle of Mount Tenji was as crushing for the Siorans as it was for Alatera. King Usasi and his son and seven daughters were all killed. That was so devastating to the country that after that time Sioran women were no longer taught the sword. The regency was established both because of the profound respect for tradition ingrained in Sioran culture and the fact that the first regent had no blood claim to the throne. The other contenders realized a regency meant that they themselves could hold power without needing a blood claim, if only they were powerful enough to take it. It suited everyone, and the myth of the coming High King gave them a hope of future glory. Our scholars' best guess is that there was a High King who ruled those lands for a single generation in the dark centuries that followed Jorsan Alcestis' fall.
Wasn't Alcestis himself called the High King?
Rarely. In the early years of his reign, he ruled over seven kings and styled himself the High King. Three of the seven, Rigel and Blue, Inaris, Silver Eyes, and Itara Laches, rebelled. After that, Jorsan was Emperor Alcestis. We don't know if the latter High King claimed descent from Jorsan or not. Almost all records of him were lost in the Dark Ages. But he only claimed the lands now encompassing Siura, Cenaria, Kalidor, and Lodrakar. Not all of Jorsan's kingdoms.
The ambassador looked unimpressed. So that's it? A long-dead legend?
Esteriel said, "Well, the Magi give some credence to a prophet or two whom we don't recognize."
"And they know more?"
"They don't know more. They believe more."
"By the god's beard, I don't care what's true. I care what people believe. What are these prophecies?"
Esteriel gave him a look that let him know he was treading on thin ice, and didn't answer until he looked on the brink of apologizing. "They say he will be a dragon. The accepted interpretation is that he'll be talented, though any conqueror brings fire. They say he will raise a standard of death. I hope that's clear enough. Things aren't going to be all prancing ponies and cuddly kittens." "Then the prophecies get strange. They say he'll bring peace." "Peace everlasting is a pretty normal staple of prophecies, right?" "Well, these prophecies say he'll bring peace for 2 years or 18. They say his coming will open the way for the return of Jorsan Alcestis, who will both be taken under his wing and test the metal, or taste the metal, it's unclear which, of his sword."
"When was this prophecy given?"
the ambassador asked. 5 years ago. A magus named Dorian, who claimed to be a rogue or Sul. Not exactly a reliable source."
"It sounds like a nightmare."
"Yes. And these things tend to spread with a religious fervor once they get started. Even if Moburu is the High King, I'd strongly advise King Alidosius to make sure he never sits in any throne, not unless you want to invite civil unrest or even civil war to Alidera. Jorsan Alcestis still stirs all sorts of emotions. A High King would itself be bad enough, considering the sheer area such a man would rule. But in the Alcestian prophecies, he is a harbinger. Think what may happen in each of our lands if people really believe that the Lord of Hell is coming in bodily form. that creatures from their nightmares will walk again, that kingdoms are doomed to fall.
Ambassador Garin looked moderately ill.
Yes.
I'll convey all this to the king.
Is that all?
No. I need to know if your lancers are on their way.
You ask me this now, after you've only just given me the information which might make the king amenable to such a request?
I gave you the information when we got it. We need those soldiers now.
I told you months ago that without access to whatever intelligence you had about an invasion, we would be unable to grant your request. If you'll pardon an old military man speaking bluntly, we can't send 5,000 lancers every time an old ally gets nervous. That's not what the Accords oblige.
An old military man? You haven't lifted a lance in 30 years.
The Accords oblige a robust defense of the Chantry, which seems even more pressing now that Maburu Anders' company, an Alateran company, fought for Kalidor at the Battle of Pavil's Grove. We're facing two enemies here even without Maburu Anders' men, and each alone may be capable of annihilating us. The fact is, even the 2,000 lancers you have across the border, yes, of course I know about them, probably won't be enough to defend us. The best I can expect is that they will hold our flank against the Lee Nort while we go to Black Barrow.
You're going to Black Barrow? Marcus Garin asked.
The Kalidorans have learned to raise Krull.
Krull? A legend! Marcus Garin scoffed. This is completely...
Have you been to Black Barrow, Ambassador?
His blue eyes looked troubled.
Black Barrow is the only place where, once killed, the Krull can't be raised again. It's the only place we can fight them with any hope of winning.
So you want us to help you invade your neighbor? That's an awfully bold interpretation of Accords intended to curtail the Chantry's imperial ambitions.
Suddenly, from many stories below, the speaker felt an unfamiliar magic. Though she'd only met a half-dozen magi and had never seen them use their talents, she knew instantly that this was a magus. In her chantry.
Speaker, is something wrong?
Ysteriel had only moments to decide how to react. Could she turn the presence of a hostile mage to her advantage? Would interrupting the meeting be to her advantage? Perhaps it could have been, if the Chantry's objective in this talk were anything positive. As it was, she wished only to back out of a centuries-old treaty without declaring war.
Yes. You slap us in the face with old, unfounded allegations, sir. We wish only to survive as a house of learning.
A rush of magic, much more familiar to her, snapped in response to the intruder, whoever he was. Ysteriel was surprised at the force of it. It was a chaining magic, and the only mage she could imagine powerful enough to use it was Ariel. Blessed, oblivious Ariel. Or perhaps Vi.
A house of learning? The ambassador asked. Does that include learning battle magic?
So he knew. Damn it.
If our allies abandon us in the face of a massacre, yes.
His lips thinned to a tiny line. This is most precipitous.
Ysteriel opened her mouth to deliver a historical reminder when a magical concussion ripped through the chantry. The constant buzz of Magi's talent ceased, and, for the first time in centuries, perhaps the first time since it was built, the chantry was utterly silent. The magic ripped through everything, though it destroyed nothing except whatever the sisters were actively weaving. It had character, a distinct flavor, free and fierce, not hostile, but rather a strength unaware of itself. The impossible image that leapt to Ysteriel's mind was of a teenage archmage, and it shocked her to her core. Ariel had tried to chain him, and he refused to be chained.
Magically, Istariel felt like a little girl trapped between screaming parents.
"What was that?" the ambassador asked.
"By the Seraph."
It was powerful enough that this untalented toad could feel it.
"We hereby withdraw from the Accords, Ambassador. If Alatera wishes to expel the Magi from its dominions, they will leave peacefully. I do request, however, that you give us 6 months to show our good faith. This is no declaration of war with you. Please let the Emperor know that we fight only to live."
The ambassador sat silently. He sipped his utai, which Istariel was certain was cold by now, but he didn't seem aware of it.
"The king always thought you were one of the Chantry's more moderate voices, Istariel. Surely the discussion needn't end on this. You wouldn't throw away hundreds of years of cooperation and progress."
The Archmage was climbing the Chantry, getting ever closer. He'd used so much magic that he still burned with it. Istariel could almost see him through the floor. She didn't want to have this conversation now, but she couldn't exactly throw the ambassador out.
"No," she said, "I don't wish to throw away anything, least of all our lives. Perhaps this fall I can come to Skon and meet with the Emperor personally."
It wasn't some random archmage, Istariel realized. It was Vi's damned husband. What the hell was he doing? Was Vi attempting a coup? No, that made no sense. Leading a coup with a man, even sisters with dual loyalties would automatically side against him. So it was something else entirely. That scared the hell out of her.
"Perhaps we could conclude this conversation later this afternoon," Istariel said.
"Your pardon, Speaker, but I can't imagine there's really anything more important than the dissolution or defense of an alliance 300 years old. I must insist we finish."
Speaker Istariel sat back down at her desk and gathered her talent to her, facing the door. He was almost here. The door exploded inward, the hinges and latch ripping through the wood, the door slapping to the ground. A young man with his face set fiercely stepped in. Istariel unleashed a massive fist of air. It turned aside in mid-air and smashed her collection of 1,000-year-old Hyrillic vases. She lashed out again and punched a hole in the ceiling. Impervious, almost oblivious to her attempts to kill him, Kyle strode to her desk, put his hands on it, and leaned forward. She gathered her full strength. He blew in her face. Her talent scattered as if that puff had been a hurricane. He said nothing. He looked into her eyes, and deep within his eyes was something that made her want to gibber like a madwoman. It was like staring at the night sky after learning for the first time that the stars were not pinpricks in the raiment of heaven, but each its own sun, billions of leagues distant. To stare into this man's eyes was to realize how small one was. Kyle sighed, not finding what he wanted. The Alateran ambassador, either finding his courage or seeing no magic springing from the young man, stood.
"I dare say, you young lout, I'm not going to let you disrespect any woman while I stand by. Stand and deliver, sir."
Istariel saw an alien magic stir deep in Kylar's eyes. Then Kylar said,
"We'll talk about respecting women when you stop fucking your wife's best friend."
The ambassador's hauteur shattered. Kyle turned on his heel and walked out. Istariel and the ambassador said nothing for a full minute. She cleared her throat.
"Perhaps," she said, "we can agree that nothing of this leaves the room."
He swallowed and nodded.